welcome to another episode of Another Texans Podcast. My name is Patrick Storm. I don't have John with me tonight, but I do have somebody that is equally as cool and actually, honestly, a little more fascinating because he's so well versed in the world of the NFL. I have Tyler Dunn with me from Go Long, and Tyler, thank you for coming on. We've been trying to do this for 2 weeks now, so I'm glad we finally got this to work.
Dude, thank you for having me, Patrick, and for understanding what life is like when you've got kids who are 4 and 2 years old, and you're just you're in a constant juggling. I was just talking to a buddy of mine today. It's when you're scheduling things day to day, it's like a game of Tetris, right? So
yes,
it's what you got to do. But hey, yeah, you were flexible. I'm so glad we're doing it. So jacked to talk some Houston Texans, some CJ Stroud, Nico Collins, and maybe you know I see your Houston gear. And my mind instantly goes to mid-90s NBA hoops. I'm just picturing like Vernon Maxwell pulling up at the – yeah, that's a football. Oh, I thought you had a Houston Rockets.
It's football. Okay. No, man, I'm a Rockets fan. I'll be frank. The Texans and the Dynamo are really the only team in Houston that I support. My loyalties lie in New England. My parents are from Boston. So, but no, I was actually – I talked about this earlier. I did a Twitter Spaces earlier. I was given this shirt by the creator. It's from a company called Dead Threads, and he sent me the shirt and he's like, can you just like wear it on the podcast? I was like, yeah, man, absolutely. Like it's a super dope shirt. So it's, I don't know if people can see it. It's a quarterback riding the bull. That's cool.
Beautiful.
So I reached out to you about, you know, after the article came out, right? You did the preview or the quarterbacks of the future, was the title of it. You sat down with Robert Woods, with Bobby Slowick, you talked about CJ, you talked about Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, like, you know, the three quarterbacks taken in the first round, right? And it was such a fascinating read. We got to, you know, we hear Robert and Bobby Slowick talk about CJ all the time in press interviews. But I felt like you got a lot more intimate with them about things and got them to kind of open up about some more details about CJ and just the team in general. And so I really wanted to have you on, and I'm excited to get to talk about this and highlight the article. For those that are watching on YouTube, the article is in the description for the video. So please click on it, go and subscribe to Go Long. You're going to get a lot of stuff from Tyler, but it's a lot of really good content. He covers the entire NFL. There's stories for everything in there, and subscribe to his stuff. You won't regret it. I promise you. I've been doing it for a long time and I love it. So,
thanks. Let's man. Appreciate that.
No problem. No problem. And thank you for coming on again. So, let's get into the article real quick. And it starts off, you know, you started talking about all of them, you talked about all three quarterbacks. Really cool, but you start off with CJ. Okay, what about CJ so far? The first 6 weeks of seeing him on the field impresses you the most?
The decision making, the processing. Right, there's that magic word that was thrown around with CJ Stroud. Everything is on time. I think that watching a Texans game early, you could tell he was perfect for this Bobby Slowick offense, which obviously comes from the Kyle Shanahan offense, the Sean McVay. Everything's on time. I thought Robert Woods broke it down so beautifully where, like, the quarterback, he hits that back foot, and it's timed up right with that receiver, getting out of his break, and they're testing the rules of a defense. Like, oh, you're as a linebacker or as a nickel corner, your quote-unquote rule is to drop X amount of yards. Well, they're going to stretch that 2 more yards. Like, they really do want to use every square inch of the football field in this offense. And I just think he's perfect for it. First of all, CJ Stroud, the way he throws the football, and even like the biggest CJ Stroud skeptics out there would have to agree with this. It looks like he was born to throw a football. Like, he came out of the womb and has been throwing a football ever since that moment, because it's just, it's right out of the movies. But I think that the timing of this offense is probably what stood out most. So that's what kind of got me thinking, like, okay, well, the Texans bet everything on this guy. The Panthers bet everything on that guy and Bryce Young. The Colts bet everything on Anthony Richardson, and we see this every year where teams that need a quarterback eventually take that quarterback, and then everybody's jobs are instantly on the line in the entire building. What happens after that, right? The draft night, everything sounds great. It's so funny when you go back and you look at like the 2021 draft. Zach Wilson gets taken, and maybe it was Todd McShay. Gosh, I don't remember who it was. But they're talking about like his swag, and he's cocky, but they love that cockiness about him. It's like every draft night, everybody's going to be an all pro. But I think the point of this story is like, okay, well, what's most important really is what you do after you turn in that card to Roger Goodell. After you take your quarterback, how do you put that quarterback in the best possible situation to succeed? Because if you go back through it, I mean, it's a little subjective, but I think I looked at all the quarterbacks taken in the top 10 the last 15 years, and half of them bust at least. Yeah. That's a conservative estimate. And I think that we're already seeing why some quarterbacks bust out, why some quarterbacks pan out. And a lot of it has to do with the situation. And CJ Stroud, holy hell, is he in a great situation with Bobby Slowick, D'Amico Ryans, Nico Collins, Robert Woods, his entire offense.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree more. And early on, you know, before the draft, everyone's throwing Bryce this and CJ this, and Will Levis was being floated as a potential target for the Texans, Anthony Richardson, countless free agents. No one knew where they were going to go. Very early on, I had my heart set on CJ. And a lot of people they ask why and stuff like that. And I always just felt like, and this isn't a knock on Bryce or any of the other guys, but I just felt like CJ was the guy that in 10 years, you're going to look back on and be like, they made the right choice. He's developed into your Tom Brady, your Patrick Mahomes, right? Like that's what the ultimate goal is, right? Year 1 through 5, they're going to develop, they're going to learn, they're going to grow. And then from then on, after that, that's when it should just be easy for them at this point. We're week 8 and it looks easy for them. It's crazy. I would have been okay with Bryce, probably been okay with Anthony Richardson. But I just felt like that CJ was going to be that guy that, you know, that didn't peak in college, that's not going to show up in. You have already seen the best of them. They're still peeling back layers for this kid. And each week we've seen it and he's gotten better and better. So that was where I was at. And I was so excited that they were able to draft him. In your article, you thought you talked about the scheme and everything like that. And you said, think about Tua and think about Brock Purdy, who we've seen have immense success in the Shanahan offense. Right. And I know last weekend, the game didn't go according to plan for them and things, you know, made some bad throws. And now we know they had a concussion. That kind of explains a few things. And then you talked about the timing, like you mentioned earlier, right? Like you see CJ make these throws where the receiver's not even looking at him yet and the ball's already out. That's not something you usually see out of a rookie quarterback. That's right. Something you see out of year 10, like year 8, like they've got to develop timing and relationships and rhythm. And he's already got that. Like that to me, that's crazy that they drafted this kid second overall and he's already doing those things. So I thought that was really cool.
I think that these quarterbacks and these offenses too are going to force us all to kind of rethink quarterback play. I mean, this is such an innovative offense that really tries to give you an answer for anything the defense throws at you. I mean, that's what Robert Woods said. That's why I love his perspective. I covered him here in Buffalo. So the Buffalo Bills drafted him and he was in some pretty elementary offenses here in Buffalo. Greg Roman, there's a reason that these wide receivers are so vocal about Greg Roman's passing game. It is simple. I've talked to Willie Snead about it. He was blunt, just said, "Oh, guys don't want to sign there because it's just like the old school route tree that we ran in high school football, right? Like 1 through 9, like you call a play, you run a route and that's it." So he was in that offense. He was with the Tennessee Titans, another fairly simple call a play, run the play offense. And in between, he had Sean McVay. So he knows what it's like when you've got a coach and a game plan and plays that you're not just calling a play. It's designed. It's crazy to say this out loud, but not every team does this. It's designed to take advantage of your weakness in the defense. Like that's where their sore spot is. Like that's your weakness. That's your corner who's susceptible to that kind of route. Well, we're going to exploit that again and again and again until you stop it. That's what this offense is. And it's all timing based. The play comes in. There's maybe two plays within that one play. And that's where CJ Stroud is perfect for, a lot like Brock Purdy and a lot like Tua Tagovailoa. He's accurate. Like if the player's open, he's going to hit that player. He's going to throw it to that spot. He knows the spot he has to throw to. And if that window is closed, as Bobby Slowick said in the story, he moves to the next guy. So is he asked to do what Bryce Young is doing in terms of being in the pocket and really going through progressions 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 while setting the protections, while setting the hots, while having to handle all that at the line of scrimmage? No, but who cares? Tua doesn't. Yeah. And Tua's was an MVP candidate at this point last year, and he'll probably be in the mix again this year. Brock Purdy was before that concussion, like you said. I think that we have to kind of rethink a lot of stuff about the quarterback position. Like even these guys like Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts, who aren't that accurate, like you can improve accuracy. There's quarterback coaches who work with these guys year round. Like you can attack it like it's a jump shot in basketball. So Bobby Slowick strikes me as one of those coaches who does think outside of the box and is going to get the absolute most out of his players. It's not the case everywhere. I can tell you what, there's a lot of frustration with some teams around the NFL. And I would put the Carolina Panthers in that bucket, and that there's people in that organization. And we've got this in the story too, who see a simple offense, who see a play being called and you're just running that play. And it doesn't really matter what the defense is doing. And you're not really putting Bryce Young in the best positions to succeed. What they should be doing is like, all right, Bryce, we know you're really dang smart. His smarts are kind of used against him because he can handle all the protections. He can do all that stuff. So they throw all that on his plate. Well, maybe even take some of that stuff off his plate. He can just kind of play. He doesn't have to think too much out there. Like CJ Stroud, I don't know this to be a fact. I don't think he has to handle a lot protection wise, audible wise. Like if the play comes in and he's going to run it and he's going to know where to go with the ball, and his natural ability is just going to take over, where we haven't really seen that out of Bryce Young. I think it's changing. I mean, they changed their play caller, and now these two teams are playing, and you might see that dichotomy between the two offenses, between a Frank Reich offense and a Bobby Slowick offense.
Yeah, I talked about this earlier in the spaces with the guys that I was on there with it. You know, we don't know what to expect this weekend out of Carolina, right? Because he's first-time play caller, and we're not sure what they're going to throw at him. So I'm really interested to see what that's going to be like. In the article, Robert mentions that it takes a very talented quarterback to run this offense, right? And he mentions that he played with Jared Goff. He mentions that he played with Matt Stafford, two guys, Jared Goff, who's having tremendous success last year and this year, Matt Stafford, who's won a Super Bowl now. So now he's getting to play with a rookie, a guy that's, you know, fresh into the league, and he can't say enough about him, right? And you know, the thing with, like you mentioned earlier, like the decision-making for this is what this offense is based around, and the timing. All we heard about CJ pre-draft was this S2 score crap where he's going to be this awful quarterback because he can't take a test, because he can't answer these questions. And I feel like he's just totally dunked on that and like invalidated everything about the S2.
You know, what's so funny, Patrick, is the S2 scores, they were all reported at our website too. Reddit, go along. Bob McGinn has his draft series at our site now, as you know. And I remember editing that story, posting that story, and thinking, whoa, I never heard of S2. I've heard about the Wonderlic. I never heard of S2. And then since that came out, I've talked to people around the league, including higher ups. And it differs. Like there are teams who really do use the S2. And value the S2. And I'm not sure if this is still the case. What I was told is basically like one team per division can use it. And if you're not one of those teams, that you can pay to use it, and it's a lot of money. And that the S2 people, the people who had the test, the way they sell it to these teams is that we are basically a bust finder. Like you use our test and we are going to show you who will be a bust in the NFL. And that it's not necessarily like you score a 97, you're guaranteed to succeed. I think like Sam Ellinger had a great score. You've got to have some other ability, but the way that they pitch it to these teams is like if a guy has a low score, It's a red flag. You better not take that player and stay away. So CJ Young, combining the quarterbacks now. CJ Stroud scores terribly, right? 18 or whatever it was. That's been, I've heard people say, yeah, that's the case. Even Bobby Sloak said that's probably accurate. But I was told a couple teams asked him to take a second time. Who knows what that score was? It hasn't come out. Maybe the first score was a fluke too. Maybe he just didn't know how to take the test. I hated taking tests. I can remember Math B in New York State in high school ripping the pages out. God, that dang math class was worse than anything I took at Syracuse University. Hated that thing. New York State also sucks. Really should move to Texas for many reasons. So that could be the case. All I say is, like, there are coaches and there are teams who don't give a damn, to your point. Like, I really got the genuine sense that Bobby Sloak didn't care. He didn't. They didn't use it in San Francisco. They don't use it in Houston. Now, I even talked to sources in Carolina because I had heard through one source that Stroud and Young were kind of neck and neck. The S2s came out, and David Tepper, being this hedge fund guy, said, whoa, I'm staying away from CJ Stroud. Like, I'm taking Bryce Young. But then I talked to somebody in the know who would keep it real with me in the Panthers organization, and he said, no, like, that we were going to take Bryce Young. We believed in Bryce Young. Yes, it was one thing we looked at, but that was overblown. So make of it what you will. I agree with you. I think he has taken that score and dismissed it as nothing, especially when he's with this coach and he's in this offense. That's what I think we have to rethink. Look, I don't know what he scored on it. Somebody told me that Tua didn't necessarily score well. So who cares, right? Like,
yeah.
If you've got the right play caller and you're in the right offense, maybe it doesn't matter what the test is. And right, it's all about the making quick decisions, and there's a lot of sensory stuff you have to go through. It still seems fairly new. I guess time will tell. I don't see Stroud busting out. I don't see Tua busting out.
Yeah. And, you know, for all we know, you know, Bryce is still fairly young. He's not, we can't call him a bust yet. Anthony Richardson, none of that. It's way too early to tell with any of these guys. So,
I think Bryce Young will be good too. I think that he'll, granted, they got to get him a new guard and they got to get him in a wide receiver two, let alone a wide receiver one. And they've got to change the offense. But if they can check all those boxes, I mean, I think he can still succeed, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they had him a wide receiver one, but they traded to go be able to draft to him. So, I mean, yeah. That's one of those things, you know. That's just, I guess that's the cost of doing business sometimes.
It is. So, yeah.
One thing with that I've seen with CJ, and this is just in the media, and then seeing him in person, is just the genuine person that he is. This past Sunday, the Texans didn't play. We saw him on Saturday. He was on College Game Day. I'm not exactly sure what the name of the show was, doing his stuff. And then Sunday, he hosted a quarterback camp here in town, or a football camp here in town. And I'd say easily 200, 250 kids there. Massive turnout. Mm-hmm. And seeing the way CJ was interacting with these kids, it was a four-hour camp. It was from 2 to 6 p.m. And for the better part of 4 hours, CJ was throwing the football with these kids, ages 6 to 16. It didn't matter how old the kid was. CJ was hitting the kid in stride. It was insane. Like, it was like 16-year-olds are obviously they're running pretty quick and doing, you know.
Is that right? That's a great observation.
it was like I was sitting there watching my son was doing the camp. And so I'm watching my son, and then in between his reps, I'd kind of like look over and CJ, like they were running the reps right in the middle of the field. And CJ is just flicking the ball. Like, it was just effortless for him. And I was like, man, that's what it looks like for this guy on Sunday. Like, it's crazy to see a quarterback so young have so much success and just be, and like you kind of said earlier, just having fun and just playing football, right? It looks like he's in the backyard just doing his thing. It just looks so natural for him. So
I think that leadership is natural too. I mean, to just guys want to be around him. They want to play for him. Like, you can't really just write that off like early for a player to come in 21, 22 years old for any team and be the quarterback of that team. I mean, I can't imagine what that's like when you're the guy instantly telling other grown men what to do in a huddle who are a decade plus older than you. And they've got a lot of veterans on this team. This is where I give D'Amico Ryans and everybody so much credit. And this is what I completely missed over the offseason. Honestly, I just, the Houston Texans have been kind of out of my mind for the last couple of years, right? Like David Culley, Lovie Smith. It's like a franchise on pause. Like what? All right, yeah. When are we going to try to win here, guys? When should we care about you? They hired D'Amico Ryans, and it's like, oh, okay, that's an inspired hire. And now you're signing guys like even like Jerry Hughes from here in Buffalo. I guess that was a little earlier, but Robert Woods, Steven Nelson, Devin Singletary. Who am I missing? Sheldon Rankins. Across the board. I mean, I'm looking around this locker room on my visit to Houston. I'm like, they've got some dudes here. And so you fill that locker room up with proven veterans. Dalton Schultz, there's another one. And they draft a rookie quarterback. Like, how is that rookie going to lead? I don't know. I think a lot of fans watch a game on a Sunday and it's 3 hours and plays are called. And it seems like they're almost cyborgs out there that you plug into a fantasy football lineup. But football is so much more than that. There's the other 6 days of the week when you do need leaders to step up. And that leader probably should be your quarterback in a lot of situations. The sense I get is that that's been natural for CJ Stroud. I mean, Robert Woods is a guy who's been around so many different quarterbacks and so many different offenses. And man, did he light up just talking about CJ Stroud, saying he has it. He's like, I know good quarterback play. I've been around it. He is right there with anybody I've been with, Jared Goff, Matt Stafford included.
Yeah. And you mentioned that in the article that I didn't know this. Robert Woods is one of the three oldest wide receivers in the NFL, right?
Yeah. I guess Julio Jones now joined the fray again, but yeah, he's right there. Yeah. That's if you include Randall Cobb, who's a corpse at this point, right? The Rodgers tax.
Yeah, recently in Houston, and we all saw how that went. So, man, when you're talking about the leadership stuff, obviously he gets voted as a captain for the team. It's just everyone praises him. There's always constant praise from the guys when they're asked about him. And it's really cool to see. It's been a very welcome change of pace for what Houston has had to go through for the past several years, prior to Deshaun, after Deshaun. And real quick, I want to jump back real quick. You mentioned something earlier about like the way that the play calling is and like the play design. And I found this very interesting. Looking back at the past couple of years and seeing the route concepts that Nico Collins would run. And you go to like, and ESPN Next Gen, and you can see those charts where it shows like the squigglies across the screen, right?
Oh yeah.
And Nico's was just like one side, straight, like very boring. Now you look at it, and it looks like Bobby Slowick's weaving a blanket with Nico Collins, and then you mesh that with Tank Dell or Noah Brown or Robert Woods and the running backs, Dalton Schultz and stuff like that, and it's fascinating to watch like how the different layers of the offense. So you got to talk to Bobby and you talked to him about like just about CJ and just everything all in general. Tell me how you feel. Like, is Bobby going to be one of these guys that is one and done as a coordinator because he gets hired? Or you think it's somebody that is going to stick around for a couple of years and kind of establish himself?
That's a good question. I mean, it's a good problem to have if you're the Texans, if you, make the playoffs, win the division, win a playoff game, win two playoff games. I mean, hell, if Sean McVay gets hired at 32, was he? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't Bobby Slowick? Why wouldn't an owner think outside the box? You should. My God, if you're interested in winning and staying at the cutting edge of football, you better get one of these guys because more often than not, it works out. I mean, you can hear it in the voices of these personnel execs across the NFL. There's envy when they watch the Houston Texans. They're watching this offense and like, oh my God, like what they're doing is incredible. And he has to be the one getting the credit for that. And CJ Stroud too. I think what was interesting about Bobby Slowick too is the humility. He just seems like such a selfless guy. Even in a conversation, you try to like build him up and his scheme and his offense. And granted, it's a one conversation I had with the guy. I don't know him as a person. But I've talked to a lot of coaches around the NFL, and a lot of them have egos. A lot of them have sticks up. You know what? He doesn't have any of that. I thought that was really a quality that popped. And if you've got that quality to you, you're going to make a good head coach, because that's rare. Like, look at Mike McDaniel. Mike McDaniel is probably the smartest human being in every room that he walks into. The guy is like a genius. He's inventing plays. But he doesn't act like that at all. He's hilarious. He's self-deprecating. Yeah. He knows that the players really run this game. And I think Bobby Sloak is cut from the same cloth. Like, he knows the players are the ones out there sacrificing their bodies, sacrificing their brains. They bring everything he puts on a whiteboard or on a tablet. They bring that to life. Like, you can draw up whatever you want, but you need Nico Collins, you know, taking a slant and breaking three tackles against the Pittsburgh Steelers for a big play. And I think he gets that. And I'd want him to be a head coach if I was an owner. The thing is, it depends on how the rest of the season goes. And there's other coaches, right? Ben Johnson obviously will be a hot candidate. Is it Frank Smith, I believe, in Miami? I mean, he's just, you know, he's with Mike McDaniel. So I think he gets opportunities. You never really know with these owners. I mean, my God, Urban Meyer was hired by Shad Khan in Jacksonville. So, you know, there's going to be an owner out there who does something stupid. But I'm really interested to just watching like these Jacksonville Houston games for years and years with these quarterbacks, with these teams. And even if he does go somewhere, I imagine his staff, he's got a good staff. Like, there'll be somebody ready to kind of step in and continue on what he built.
Yeah. And I mean, that's basically how the Shanahan tree has been, right? Like, you look at what Kyle's dad did, you look at what Kubiak's done. Look at how many guys, you know, you mentioned Mike McDaniels, Robert Saleh, D'Amico. Now there's the potential for Bobby Slowick to end up somewhere. Like, this tree just keeps branching off and going all these different directions. It's really crazy. And I feel like that's going to possibly be, they're going to eventually just take over the entire NFL. It's all going to, you know, root out of the Shanahan tree.
Root out the dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, there's a Packer fan watching this right now, and they're thinking, what the hell, man? Matt LaFleur, like, he comes from that tree. Why does our offense look so basic? Yeah, and so I don't know. I got to figure that out. I got to talk to some people.
I don't understand how they can be so bad.
Love. They're so young. My God, they're so young. I mean, like, Rashid Walker at left tackle has been terrible. The play calling has been bad. The defense hasn't been good. I mean, Jordan Love has missed throws, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think they got a lot of problems that go beyond the quarterback there. And it is interesting. Like, I think Green Bay and Houston, like, going into this season, they're probably thinking, this is going to be fun. Like, this is going to be a refreshing season with a new offense, with a lot of young talent all over the field offensively. And these two teams have just kind of gone different directions. Like, their records really aren't, their records are different by one game. And I feel like the mood and the tenor around the teams are polar opposite right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, at this point in the season, I don't remember exactly what my predictions were for the year, but I don't feel like I thought the team would be at 500 right now. And then heading into week eight and just the excitement, right? I didn't have like major expectations for the season. I felt like they were like a 6-win team. We're halfway there already with 11 games left. Like, it's just absolutely mind blowing. And the biggest thing I really wanted was just to see growth week over week over week. And I feel like we've already seen that. And I just hope to see that again for the remainder of the season. You talked about they throw plays on a whiteboard. A few weeks ago, we saw Dalton Schultz score a touchdown. And after the game, they talked about it. And it was a play that CJ and him sat down and came up with. In recent years, have you heard of quarterbacks, young quarterbacks like this, sitting down and designing plays and them getting called?
Not that young, right? And not really in an offense where, like, here we are trained to think that Bobby Slowick and this Shanahan tree and these mad scientists in a dark room somewhere are devising these plays and these game plans, and the players are just basically puppets, and it flies in the face of that. I mean, that says a lot about Slowick and D'Amico Ryans and the entire Texans coaching staff, where we're going to let the quarterback and the tight end, like, experience something out on the field, bring it to life themselves. Like, they're the ones out there, right? Again, pro player, player empowerment. They're the ones that see it and live it and breathe it and sweat it. And like, they know, like, they've got a feel for the opponent out there. And I thought that was so interesting what CJ Stroud said, is like, he knew Jesse Bates, like, would want to make the play in that moment, right? The same Jesse Bates, week one against Carolina, against a simple offense, Frank Reich's offense. I talked to Jesse Bates about this season. He said, yeah, I watched Frank Reich's offense with the Colts last year. And then I watched his offense with the Panthers in the preseason. And once like certain formations and certain plays lined up, I knew it was coming. And you watch both of those interceptions on Bryce Young. He knew it was coming and he jumped the route. So what does CJ Stroud do? He knows, game on the line, Jesse Bates is going to want to jump it. And so, yep, little send Dalton Schultz in, send him back out. Like, filthy route as Slowik said himself.
Yeah.
Perfect throw. And for a young quarterback and a young coordinator, first-time play caller, to connect and pull that off. That was a signature moment. I think that, and granted, they lost the game, but again, it didn't feel that way, right? Like, when you think big picture about the growth of the team, that is such a seminal moment that you don't really see out of rookie quarterbacks too often. You know, at Go Long, I do a show with Brett Favre, and he was just reliving like his first game against the Cincinnati Bengals. And, you know, there was heroics involved. He threw a game-winning touchdown to Kittrick Taylor. Guys believed, but you know, he didn't know what a nickel defense was. He didn't know what game situation was. He was just out there playing. Like, if Mike Holmgren called a play and there was a deep route on that play, he's taking a shot. For CJ Stroud, intellectually, to go through that kind of stuff in the heat of the moment, which, by the way, the pressure, the stakes, right? I mean, a full stadium, everybody watching at home, you're a rookie, like, and he's not really flustered. I think that says a lot too. The fact that he just didn't feel pressure. He didn't clam up. I think a lot of young quarterbacks would in that moment.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even the pressure of last week, you know, being week six or the week before, sorry, but week six, he hasn't thrown an interception yet. And he's facing a very, you know, a very solid Saints secondary. And he throws a pick. It didn't faze him. He bounced back from it immediately and finished out the game. And they played great. He played great. And so I feel like, you know, seeing that, the poise, everything about this kid it's got me excited, very excited for the future. I'm very excited for this weekend. Number one, number two playing each other.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
I'm excited for the Texans.
And three playing each other. So
This is Will Anderson.
This is the first time in the modern draft era that the first three picks will play each other in a game.
He's a badass too, man. He's going to be a stud. Like, I don't care what the numbers say about Will Anderson right now. Like, you watch a Texans game, he's just got some juice to him as a pass rusher, everything. Like, you can see why they aggressively wanted to get back in there. And another thing, it didn't really hit me in the moment. Like, and when the Texans made that trade on draft night, I'm thinking, well, that's cute, right? Like, look at this team that's just kind of been forgotten, doing something bold. And you look back, man, this whole offseason for this team, it was a defining transition for the franchise. Like, they're like, all right, enough messing around. I'm sure the fans out there were glad to see it. Like, even if you knew nothing about Will Anderson, nothing about CJ Stroud, nothing about these veterans they signed, nothing about D'Amico Ryans, like, they've been proactive at every turn. And I think that every team has to do it. There are some teams, like a new GM, a new head coach are hired, and they kind of just tiptoe around these decisions. They kind of push the quarterback decision a year or two down the road, push everything down the road and just kind of run it back. And next thing you know, everybody's fired. Like, at least they made bold decisions here, which is admirable.
Yeah. They're going to go down swinging. And I think Nick said that early on, that if he, you know, if he ever is going to get fired or something like that, he's going to go out swinging. And it's been a welcome change. It really has to see. And we'll talk about Carol this weekend with Carolina. Brian, the OC out in Carolina, I can't draw a blank on his name.
Oh man, my brain is Thomas Brown, right?
Thomas Brown. So Texans interviewed him. He ends up out in Carolina as the OC, which I think is really cool. I think the Texans did their interview class this year. I think the very bulk of them ended up becoming head coaches or got a promotion somewhere else, which is really cool to see. That means that they did well in their interview class. So we got Houston heading into Carolina against an 0-6 Panthers that have nothing to lose. New play calls are going to be happening. What are you expecting to see out of Carolina this weekend moving forward?
I think there's going to be more hurry-up offense. When Bryce Young has been efficient and impressive this season, it's usually like at the end of the half, at the end of the game, mm-hmm. when they're down 28-7 against Detroit, right? The game's kind of out of hand at that point. But that's when his instincts kind of take over. When he looks like the quarterback that he was at Alabama, look, he doesn't really have that overwhelming athletic or physical trait. He's not like Lamar Jackson, where he's just going to, you know, juke and spin and leap and, you know, be a running back and a quarterback. He's not going to evade the rush that way. He's not going to evade it like Josh Allen, just shrugging guys off him and making a big play. But he still escaped pressure in college. He's slithery. Ooh. And I think that's the fear, right? Like, these are bigger grown men. These are DNs that run a 4.5 and have 9% body fat and bench 225, yeah. 25 times. Like, and it's every week. Like, and all these offensive lines are overwhelmed. So that pocket's caving on him. What I was told is he's seeing the field fine, even though he's short, but he's slight of frame, right? He's thin. Man, you Drew Brees, he always had great guards. Jerry Evans, Carl Nix, you know, Josh Lucas, the former Saints scout, he was in the story as well. He said, that's why we always invested in guards. Like, give him the strength in the middle, and it doesn't really matter what's happening at tackle. He's going to be able to step up into the pocket and make a throw. Carolina's best guard has been out, Austin Corbett, so they get him back soon. Like you said, don't really have any good receivers. I mean, Adam Thielen is playing about as well as you could expect, but he's in the last legs of his career. Right now, I think what you expect to just try to get the most out of Bryce Young is that. Like, hurry up offense, get things moving, try to get him into a rhythm, and maybe you find that quarterback that you saw in the SEC every Saturday the last couple seasons. So that's probably what you see, but I think that the Bryce Young project is going to be like a 2 or 3 year project. Like, and they're invested into him. The fact that they gave up all that draft capital is why you're seeing Frank Reich's play calling get stripped away from him. Like, they, we invested too much into this guy for him to run that kind of offense. Like, we know Frank, the deck is stuck against you. We had to give up DJ Moore to get him. The line has all these injuries, but something had to change. And next season, they don't have a first-round pick, obviously. Maybe somebody pops up in free agency, but really good wide receivers rarely get to free agency, so they're going to have to be aggressive in a trade. I don't know how they're going to answer all those questions, but I'm not ready to give up on Bryce Young yet. I think that he's still a very talented quarterback, extremely smart, and he does read the field really, really well. And this is where it comes down to the team just doing everything in their power to maximize that kind of player.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the benefit of being able to have a quarterback that you drafted in the first round on a rookie deal that's got the talent that that kid possesses, because he's obviously a very talented quarterback, and he's a very intelligent quarterback. We saw that in Alabama. We've seen glimpses of it in the NFL already. John, my co-host, always made it the point, because John was very high on Bryce, that Bryce was very good at protecting himself whenever it came to a sack or when he would scramble. He didn't take unnecessary hits and stuff like that. So, well, hopefully that continues for him, because, you know, you definitely want to see, you know, you don't ever want to see anything bad happen to these guys, and you want them to be successful. So I feel like the defense this weekend for the Texans has this advantage with, you mentioned the offensive line a couple of times. And we talked about Will Anderson a little bit earlier. We've seen the pressure, right? The Texans are top of the league in pressures, bottom of the league in sacks. Do you feel like this is the week that it breaks through, that they finally start to stack a couple of sacks up against a battered Carolina offensive line?
Gosh, you would think so, right? Like, this would be the team. This would be the homecoming game. This is when you get right in every facet. It has all of the ingredients for a blowout Texans win in every sense. Like, I mean, that this is a Texans team that's better than the record shows. The Panthers are in disarray. They've only looked good like for a quarter here, a quarter there, and they just regress to what they are talent wise in each game. Even the Miami game, they went 14-0. And even watching that, it's like, well, okay, well, let's see if this lasts for four quarters. They're just the talent gap between the Panthers and the Texans is substantial. And I, you know, it's interesting. It's like even the Texans are, their pass rush is so good and they're so deep. I got for a guy like Jerry Hughes to not be the biggest source of that pass rush. I'm just so used to here in Buffalo. He's been their number one pass rusher. It seems like a decade, right? He didn't always get the sacks, but he'd always get the pressures. They needed him. Like if they didn't have Jerry Hughes over those seasons, I don't know where the Bills defense would have been. And the fact that he's kind of like a necessary for the Houston defense this season says a lot about that Houston defense, I think.
Yeah. And Jonathan Gernard has kind of had a little bit, it's still early, but a little bit of a resurgence here. He's getting to the quarterback more often than Will Anderson, but he's generating pressures. He's making tackles all over the place. So they've kind of got, you know, like a good problem, right? Like they've got some depth. I'm hoping this weekend is that week that they can kind of start to stack some of those sacks up. Trade deadlines next week. What are you hearing about the Texans? You think they're going to be buyers? You think they're going to be sellers? You think they're going to be stamp pat?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I would be talking out of my butt, just guessing. I have not heard anything about the Texans and the trade deadline. And I know this is the time of year where I should be like concocting lists and power rankings and mock drafts and get onto that grift, because there's a lot of grift. This is prime grifting season for some for some websites, right? Like, hey, here's five names that the Texans could use. Like, I don't know. I would just be misleading your listeners if I were to guess. I think they should be buyers, obviously. I mean, why not? Go for it. They've been buyers from day one of free agency, right? Yeah. They've been trying to win, which is great. If you got a quarterback on a rookie deal, why would you just kind of wait around? Like, go for it. So whoever it is, whatever they need, do it. Right? This is the time. Cincinnati did it with Joe Burrow. Before that, Buffalo did it with Josh Allen. Cincinnati did it with Joe Burrow. Jacksonville did it with Trevor Lawrence. Everybody laughed at the Jaguars when they signed Zay Jones and Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram and Foye Oluwakan. Well, all these dudes are some of the best at their position, and they're a Super Bowl contender themselves. Texans said they didn't even need to take the quarterback yet, and they started signing guys. So, yeah, they've got money to spend. Do it. Do it. You'd be dumb not to.
Yeah, I feel like this is the time, and you mentioned it earlier about how these GMs get hired and the head coaches get hired, and then they kick the can down the road for a couple of years. They're in prime position right now. Like, the NFL does not have, in my opinion, a clear-cut contender right now. Like, Kansas City hasn't been the Kansas City of years past. Cincinnati's faltering. Buffalo isn't really doing what they've done in the past couple of years. Like, there's nobody that's just dominating the league. Yeah, the Eagles are having some success. San Francisco is having some success. But San Francisco just got beat by Minnesota, right? And Minnesota's been bad this year. So, like, I feel like it's just anybody's game. Texans are sitting at 500. If they win this week, they're up a game. They've got some draft capital heading into the next year and some money, a lot of money to spend. So, how are we doing on time for you? I know you've got the game coming up.
Yeah, you know what? We've got it. We do like a live chat at the site, and I'm meeting up with my pod co-host. Right, this is the great excuse. We're meeting up at a brewery for it. But
man, it's awesome.
As much as I'd love to, it's great. Hamburg Brewing Company in town. If anybody's through Western New York, they actually sponsored our podcast for a while. Then we went to Fatty Beer, and we're doing like a little Hamburg reunion for the folks. But I know it. Maybe we could do like, let's pick it up and do this again though, because I'm gonna keep doing Texan stories. I've got Nico Collins tomorrow morning. Friday morning, whenever people are listening to this, he was awesome. We sat down for an hour down there in Houston, nice. Got into his, you know, I say he's an ascending star. I think A Star Is Born. I think he is here. Like, you watch his tape, as you said, the way he moves, the way he runs routes, the way he fits into this offense, where he came from, everything he's been through, he's exactly what they need. I think, you know, San Francisco has Deebo Samuel kind of bringing that offense to life in his own way. I think Houston has Nico Collins bringing this offense to life in his way. So if people want to check that out, would love it. Go along, td.com. Story will be open to everybody, but would love it if you subscribed as well. Eight a month, 50 a year, completely powered by readers. Like, no ads, no sponsors, no corporate, nothing. Like, we just want to completely be fueled by folks who want to read. So, you know, hey, take 20 minutes out of the day to read a story, learn something. I think there's people out there who still want to do that in this crazy game. So can't thank you enough.
Yeah, definitely, man. You're like I said, I've been reading your content for at least a year, probably closer to 2 years now. And it's been great to read. I love reading about the other teams. I hated just pigeonholing myself about the Texans. And I felt like when I started reading your stuff, it was like the best way to be able to, you know, learn and find out about what's going on around the league, right? Yeah. Like, I can go read the national stuff. I can go read Rappaport. I can go read Schefter or those guys. They do cool stuff. But I felt like the grassroots type of stuff that you do is just so much better. And it's just more geared towards what I like. And I'm excited about that Nico article. I'm super excited about that. So
I appreciate that, man. It's, you know, there's a lot of mainstream outlets out there, and, you know, they're spamming with ads, and they've got, I just love being in my own world, being my own boss and powered by the people, right? It's like, these are the people pouring their heart and their soul. Like, forget money, like the emotional investment that people make into pro football. I do not take for granted. So I appreciate you reading, Patrick. And thanks for the opportunity here on the pod to kind of reach some Texan fans.
Definitely, Tyler. Thanks for coming on. And everybody, thanks for tuning in. If you're listening on Spotify, I will get the link to John for the article that we were talking about earlier, so he can put it in the description there. And as always, and Tyler, tell them where to, besides the Go Long website, tell them where they can follow you on Twitter or, you know, Instagram, stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yep. It's just Ty Dunne, TyDunne on Twitter, X, Instagram, and all stories right there at golongtd.com. And it's on Substack too. So if you read other Substacks, you can subscribe pretty easily on the app.
Awesome. Thanks. My name is Patrick Storm. You can find me on Twitter at Patrick Storm HTX. Thanks guys for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next week.